Welcome to episode 118 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Not doing the live 40-minute version like we did last week. Alan Olson, probably happy about that.
Thank goodness. Although I think probably our listeners are probably pretty happy about that as well.
I think some enjoyed it, like we said. They got it's filled up more of their time.
Killed the commute.
Yeah. Kenny Perry, traveling, Travelers Championship. Ah. There's a segue in there somewhere, but I'm not clever enough to figure it out. But he wins the Travelers Championship kind of in a walk in the park.
Yeah, he shoots a record 258, goes out and shoots just some ridiculously low scores. Yeah, played quite well, and you know, for a guy not named Tiger, is probably one of the hottest players of the last year or so.
Yep, he's won several times in the past year. He's defending this week at the John Deere Classic. He got another one of his wins. A lot of his wins, though, you know, he won the Memorial last year. Tiger wasn't playing in that, but Tiger's not the only guy out there, obviously, that's a good player. But a lot of his wins seem to come in, I don't want to say weak field events, but certainly not the strongest of fields. That's not to say he couldn't have beat Tiger and Phil and a bunch of other good guys at the Travelers Championship, because he played really well. But he does seem to eat up some of those events. Again, the Memorial being one of the big exceptions there.
I think that's a very good point. You know, you look at the two guys that were really doing the closest to competing with him, and you're looking at Paul Goidos and David Toms, which both in their 40s and, you know, whatever. But I guess we're still waiting to see if there's anybody else under the age of 40 who can play on the PGA Tour right now. Hunter Mahan's pretty hot, but he's not winning, and that's really about it.
Right. Investigations are underway as to whether Kenny Perry, in order to shoot 258, skipped the 15th and 16th hole of each round. We'll report back on that when we find out. That was sarcasm.
I got nothing for you.
Yeah. Yunjung Yi won in a playoff at the Jamie Farr Owens Corning Classic. This is in the news for two reasons. One, I went on Sunday to this event. And two, Michelle Wee shoots a final round 64 to finish tied for third. 7-under par, 6-under on the back nine alone. Really a good showing. She moves up to 12th on the LPGA Tour money list. And still will not be in the U.S. Women's Open this week. she and Natalie Gulbis can, she had to win. She and Natalie Gulbis can room together and watch it from somewhere.
And watch it on high def. Hey, LPGA was on TV, if you can believe it.
Yep, ESPN2.
Pretty fun tournament. Yeah, ESPN, the deuce. Pretty fun to watch. Morgan Pressel, played quite well. But I think the biggest surprise was the fact that Michelle Wee, played quite well. About 4 hours before, I think she was done about 4 hours before anybody else was. But
right.
Played quite well, and unfortunately won't be at the Women's U.S. Open. But hopefully this is a boost for things to come.
Indeed. We'll move on. The big news of the week, the most recent week, some little event happened in Washington, D.C. We got a showdown that we've been waiting for. Tiger Woods, Anthony Kim, final round. Big tournament, although not the strongest of fields, because bizarrely, several of the top 10 players decided not to play.
Yeah.
Not sure what that's about, but we get the showdown we want, and it ends up being a bust, because Hunter Mahan, the guy you mentioned before, shoots a 62, also about 4 hours before Tiger Woods finished, and finishes second, out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was completely completely out of left field to have Mahan shoot that incredible 62, and then we got to see him hit balls on the range. That's pretty much it. So, big disappointment with Anthony Kim. He just looked completely...
What was it? Was it lack of mental prowess? Was it just a swing that's in flux right now and wasn't there all day Sunday? Was it, like they tried to play up on TV, was it the tactician versus the aggressor? What failed there for him, in your opinion?
Well, I definitely think his swing failed him. He was pulling and hooking the ball and just did not look comfortable at all in the tee box. I think part of it I guess we still have to remember that he is only 23. Whether or not you can say it's nerves yes, he won the Ryder Cup, but there again, final round with Tiger Woods, we've seen many other people fold. I would say a combination of a bad swing and a little case of the nerves playing with Tiger.
Yeah, the Tiger effect has its effect once again. Tiger, his 68th PGA Tour win, he's well over 90%, 46 of 49 tournaments when leading after 54 holes. The three he didn't win were 1996 and 2000-2004 in the Tour Championship. He finished tied for fifth and second. You know, some 94%. I think the next closest to him is Phil Mickelson at 78% or something like that. He's won 32 out of 38 tournaments, holding a 36-hole lead at 84%, which is nuts. That's halfway through the tournament. 68th tour win again. He's now won, we'll call it the Legends Circuit. He doesn't play in the Hogan or the Byron Nelson tournaments, but he's kind of won the Legends Circuit. He's won Jack Nicklaus's tournament. He's won Arnold Palmer's tournament. Now he's won his own tournament in the same year here. All 2 weeks before a major. What do you have to say to any of that?
Speechless. I mean, that's just unbelievable. You always figure he's up there, and if he enters the event, he's, you know, good chance he's going to win, but not the fact that it's after 54 holes, 94% of the time he wins. You know, after holding 36-hole lead, it's 84%. I mean, that is just insane amount of wins.
Did you see anything in his swing, in the way he played on Sunday, that made you think of anything? Or, you know, I mean, he played the 11th hole like a chop, but he did that all week. I think it was 5 over on that hole. But the rest of the round seemed pretty well under control. Kind of a funny little chip shot there on 16, but, you know, comes back and makes a putt. 19-footer, 20-footer. Really seemed in control of his ball. His driving accuracy was up. I think he was top 10 or something, you know, or up there, 70-some percent for the week, driving accuracy.
Yep, tied for 7th with Hunter Mahan.
If he's got the driver figured out, I have to think it's pretty scary.
Oh.
And by driver, I mean whatever he hits off the tee. You know, occasionally that's a 3 or 5 wood, but...
I mean, for him to have... I mean, not only is the distance back, I think he was 4th in overall driving distance. For him to be able to hit it as far as he is, but be able to hit fairway 73-75% of the time, I mean, that just makes it even more incredible. I mean, we could be on, you know, the beginning of another Tiger run. Who knows?
It could be like 2006, didn't win the first two majors, picked up 2 or 3 tour wins before the British Open. You know, his dad had passed away, obviously, that year. Won the British Open and basically ran the table, winning, you know, that was when he won 7 or 8 events in a row there. So we could be on something like that at this point. We'll see. We'll also be right back after this, so stay tuned.
The most important shot is the one you're about to hit. A shot on Thursday is every bit as critical
as one on Sunday afternoon.
In competition, one shot can be the difference.
The difference it takes to win.
That's why the ball you play makes a difference.
So the question isn't, why do I play tightest?
But rather,
why would I play anything else?
Why would I play anything else?
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
The forum topic of the week, brought to us by Senior Chipotle, is why is Tiger no longer dominating like he used to? Which, if you look at the official world golf ranking, I think the guy is still dominating with a almost 3-point lead over Phil. Is mind-boggling. And then you look at the rest of the guys, and he's double their points. So
yeah, I think there's a minimum divisor of 40, and Tiger's got 22 events that qualify for that. If you just divide by his 22, his world ranking is 20-point-something.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's just insane. I mean, for one thing, I mean, I guess if you want to sit there and say, why is he no longer dominating like he used to? Well, if you want to compare it to the run that he had early in his career.
Basically, he's asking why he's not winning by 10 anymore.
Right.
And I think that's the wrong question.
Okay, what is the right question?
The question is, it's the right question, but there's not a good answer, because the guy's winning more often now. You know, if you look at his win percentages, he played a lot more back then. You know, he's tuned his schedule down to 16 or so events these days. You know, it used to be 20, 19 back then. He wins a lot more recently. I mean, just recently he won his 60th, and now he's at 68. You know, he took 9 months off, and he's won 3 times this year in, like, 7 events or something. He hasn't finished outside the top 10 since 2007, British Open. You know, we're seeing a different kind of dominance. We're seeing where Tiger will not necessarily play the Anthony Kim aggressor type role and try to win by 10. We're seeing Tiger step on the necks of people by... It's almost worse to lose by 2 repeatedly, I think, to Tiger Woods than to lose by 10 occasionally and then have Tiger finish 30th the next week instead of always being in the top 10 or beating you by 2 strokes every week. I think it's his course management and the way he approaches the game. He doesn't hit driver everywhere. He doesn't always go for par fives. He's learned enough about playing golf and playing against PGA Tour players to where he knows what number he has to do, shoot to win, and that's what he shoots for. And it's easier, and it's stress-free, and it's a W is a W in the end. So
yeah, and I think that's probably the, you know, at the end of the day, that's all he's concerned about is the fact that he brings home another trophy, not the fact that he brought home another trophy. And oh, by the way, I won by 10. I think it's death by just slow, painful. I mean, it's got to be just painful for these guys to be so close. And it doesn't even look like he's really having to sweat to win. I mean, could he win by 10? He maybe could, but he's doing enough to, he does his game. He you know, hits it where he needs to. He sets up for the, you know, correct yardage for his, for whatever he wants to hit. Bam, done. And he makes it look so ridiculously easy. I think that's just got to be mind-numbing for the rest of the tour.
Hey, they take away the 11th hole at Congressional last week, and he wins by 6.
There you go.
So the other part of the equation is that the guys on the PGA Tour have gotten better. You know, they've closed the gap a little bit. When he came out, you know, he was the only guy that did fitness. He was the only guy that hit the ball that far. You know, he was the only guy that hit a lot of shots that they didn't hit. Now they hit those kinds of shots, and now they, you know, they've gone to school on him, and they haven't caught up by any stretch, but they've gained ground, I think. So it's a two-part answer.
There you go. Spoken like a true politician.
We'll be, again, right back with our beating ball segment after this.
On a scorecard, all shots are created equal.
A stroke is a stroke, and from the first tee to the 18th green, there's only one piece of equipment
I use for every one of them.
My golf ball.
And in a game
where just one shot can decide a championship,
the ball you play
makes a difference.
Makes a difference.
And that's why there's only one ball I'd ever play.
That's why there's only one ball
I'd ever play.
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Just as we get done with the Tiger talk about why he's not dominating, we have to look at Lorena Ochoa and ask, why is she not winning tournaments? It's probably been about 2.5 days since she's won a tournament. I'm exaggerating, of course, but it's, you know, she's won this year, so it's not like we're talking about a big slump. But she fires her caddy and hires Greg Johnson. So perhaps some unrest in the Ochoa camp. The caddy may have fallen on his sword a little bit and taken the blame, but interesting shakeup there. She didn't exactly play lights out at the Jamie Farr Owens Corning Classic there.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of surprising, mid-season, getting ready. You know, you're only a couple weeks out from a major, and you fire the guy who's been with you. She's won two majors, reached number one in the world with this guy, and I like the way she described it. They're parting because of a new phase in her career. What the heck does that mean?
I guess the old phase where she was number one in the world and kicked everyone's butts week in and week out, that was no good.
Apparently not. Apparently the new phase is I'm just going to lose every week and Michelle Wee will pass me by. I don't know. This is bizarre. I don't understand it.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, apparently, you know, if your game suffers, just like everybody else, why blame yourself? Blame your caddy.
Well, we should all be so lucky
to have it.
We should all be not so lucky as Carolyn Bivens. There was a players' meeting at the Jamie Farr Owens Corning Classic. I wasn't in attendance. I had a previous engagement, sorry. But
that's too bad. I was looking forward to your Twitter updates.
15 of the top players, including Paula Creamer, Christy Kerr, Lorena Ochoa, Morgan Pressel, Natalie Gulbis. I guess by top player, they kind of expand that to include Natalie Gulbis. Whatever.
Nice.
They all meet at dinner. Eventually, they draft a letter and send it off to the board of directors asking for Carolyn Bivens to resign. The Jamie Farr Owens Corning Classic may not be back next year. After 25 years, the Capilou Classic, or Capilou whatever it is, supposed to take place in October this year, canceled despite a contract to 2012. The Corning Classic, gone. Wegmans is in doubt. This is a tour that might have 8 to 10 U.S.-based events next year.
Yeah, if they're lucky at this point. This is, I don't think it's completely surprising. I think that...
Why did they wait so long? That's my question.
I think that's probably the biggest point, is why did they wait so long when they had so many of the LPGA has probably, at this point, never had a collection of talent like it's had. And yet, they're never on TV. They've got, you know, courses and tournaments that they've
They'll be on the Golf Channel next year. Some people are unfairly saying, oh, I never see them on TV. Golf Channel should show. They can't legally until next year.
Yeah.
They're stuck on ESPN2 for an hour.
You know, they'll be on the Golf Channel next year, but the problem is they'll be tape delayed because all the tournaments are over in, you know, Korea, Japan, China, who knows where. So not surprising that this happened. Just, you know, I think you brought up a good point. Why didn't this happen earlier? I think for her, she's screwed. I mean, it'd be one thing if he had a bunch of, I don't want to say lightweights, but I mean, you got the heavyweights of the tour, including the number one player saying, uh-uh, goodbye.
This is my take. I think Carolyn Mivens came in. She rankled way too many feathers really early. The press, some of the longstanding LPGA Tour administrators, including the well-respected, you know, rules official Barb Trammell, I think was her name. A lot of people left. She didn't get off on a good start. Her plan was good, though. She wanted to, you know, increase the pensions and retirement funds for LPGA players. She wanted to increase the purses. A lot of fiscal stuff that she wanted to do made sense. Then the economy hit, and this hard line, hard charging approach, she hasn't deviated from what she set out to do when she was hired a couple of years ago. And that just doesn't make any sense. She's not a marketer. She was brought in to be a marketer, but she's not marketing. She's not adjusting. All she's doing is taking this hardline approach. And at this point, it's ticking people off. Fees go up next year, supposedly, on the LPGA Tour. If that continues to go through with her plan, it just doesn't make any sense in this economy to keep pushing what she's pushing. She needs to have a tour. They're not going to have a pension without a tour. And at this point, that's looking like the likely possibility. I see almost no chance that she makes it out of this alive. Ron Sarek says the players on the 13-member board are split 5-2 against her, so they need to pick up two votes from either by convincing the other players, the other two players on the board, or two of the six non-player members of the board. But I see almost no chance that she makes it through. You know, the next LPGA event is at the end of August. It's a weird time, but you know, they have, like, they play this week. It's not an LPGA event, but it's the U.S. Women's Open. Then they have a week off. Then they go to Europe for a while, and then they come back, and it's the end of August. We may have a new commissioner or an interim commissioner by then.
And that's still 6 weeks away. Yeah, I can't see her making it through to the next event. It's too bad. I know. I think she had some good ideas, but either she just wouldn't adapt or was too arrogant to adapt or whatever, and, you know, it's too bad. There's never been a collection of talent like there is now, and they could just be running away with great stuff on the LPGA Tour, and unfortunately, they're not.
Well, a couple of quick ones here. Tiger Woods tournament gave free admission to kids. This is a thing I wish we'd see more of. The U.S. Open, the U.S. Women's Open, Augusta National are doing these kinds of things. Free kids admission or admission to kids for free under the ages of 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 or even teenagers are down, get maybe reduced prices. Tiger Woods tournament did it again. The USGA has done it. Augusta National's done it. I'd like to see this done more. I think this is cool.
Yeah, it's a great policy. Tiger was able to take a quick dig at the Yankees, which is pretty funny. Yeah, it'd be great to see. You know, you get a bunch of 12-year-olds and under to all these tournaments. They get to see how, you know, really, I mean, you see them on TV and you go, wow, these guys are good. Pun intended, I guess, with the PGA, you know, their slogan. But you see them live and it's a whole nother world. And I think you can get more people involved. You get that next generation thinking that golf is cool. I mean, I want to be able to try to hit the ball like Tiger. I want to be able to hit the ball like, you know, some of these guys. And to get them involved and get them in for free, why not?
Yeah, I want to go yell, get in the hole when someone hits the ball on a par 5. Oh, wait, we don't want them picking up that stuff.
Yeah, we don't want those people. Hopefully, they'll see that and they'll pound the people that do that.
The kids are going to pound people? Hey, you know, I'm all for it.
Not trying to incite violence here at PGA Tour events, but there are some people that definitely need to be slapped.
Right on. Some of the people that need to be slapped might have happened off the books. The PGA Tour announced they're clean of performance-enhancing drugs on the one-year anniversary of the drug test. Tim Fincham was very clear in saying they're clean on performance-enhancing drugs. He kind of danced around the issue of whether there were recreational drugs, with the understanding being, yes, many players have been busted for probably smoking a doobie. And those fines and those things are handled off the record.
Yeah, that's a different line on the spreadsheet.
Yes. We don't get a report on that.
No, which is too bad. I mean, it is kind of funny how he was very, very, very upfront about performance enhancing, nobody. Other drugs, next question, please.
We don't talk about that, yeah. Mm-hmm. The PGA Tour, finally, an issue that was last week's issue, kind of came to a head on Tuesday when Tim Fincham said, yes, we're going to go ahead with the groove rule change. I am glad to see it. I know some companies and some other people are not glad to see it for various reasons, one of them being that fitting 1,500 people in 2 or 3 months is going to be tough, which makes sense. But overall, I like the rule. I'm glad it's coming, and I'm glad the USGA was not forced to cave to the PGA Tour.
Yeah, that ends up, it works out well for everybody except for some equipment companies, although they have known for a while, so it's not like this is a complete shot in the dark. It's interesting to see that leading up to this, we were wondering what the PGA pros that are on the policy board, what they were going to do, and Fincham kind of covered their rear ends.
Well, they abstained, yeah.
By making the decision himself.
They chose not to vote, which left it up to Tim Fincham. So.
But in the end, Tiger says it's good, which means he'll start winning by 10 again, because he's the only guy that apparently shapes shots just like he does, so...
Well, I think the thing will widen the gap between the top-tier players and those so-so players. And there's a lot of so-so players on the PGA Tour, and very few of the elite players. So I think that gap will widen.
Yes.
That about does it for episode 118 of the Golf Talk Podcast. I think that's what Kenny Perry shot at the Travelers Championship 118.
Yes.
You guys know the drill. Links, click them.
Feedback. Comments.
It's all good. Yeah.
Yo. See ya.